Good morning, everyone. It is about 4 a.m. on the morning of August 2nd. It's a nice fresh morning here in Winnipeg. I hope things are well in your part of the world. It's been a painful month for me. I've torn something in one of my heels, and having to spend my entire day on my feet in the warehouse, it hasn't been a picnic. I want to thank those of you who have sent in questions this last month. I've had about 8 questions come in. And they should open up some interesting areas of exploration. I had one person send in a donation, which was very nice. As always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for posting these responses each month and making this situation possible. We have finally put together the itinerary for the California trip. I'll be in California between September 4th and the 15th, speaking at a number of different places. And that itinerary should be posted on the website by the time you're listening to this. It's been a busy month with work situations, family situations, and there seems to be some law of nature which, seems to run along the lines of the older you get, the fewer things you get done in the day. Somehow, just getting by takes up all the time. Anyway, as I said, I've had some nice questions come in, and they should open some interesting areas of exploration or consideration. So let's get down to it. A first person has written in saying, "Hey Daryl, my question is to do with relationships. Non-duality is about, I guess, recognizing that all is appearance, and that there are not, in fact, any separate entities after all. To come back to the cloud metaphor you use, there are not, in fact, any separate formed human beings. I am in a relationship with someone who I love, but who suffers intensely from anxiety. This is, I think, mostly rooted in her childhood, her parents not really parenting her properly, and as a result, she has little faith in herself as something with any worth. However, she also has a firm belief that I and she are formed things. I often think that if she could only drop her attachment to this viewpoint, she might gain a bit of relief. But whenever I mention Buddhism, she has a gut reaction against all that talk that everything changes and so on. It's almost like that really scares her. My question is, what is there to do in a situation like this? I sometimes wonder whether my concern to provide a bit of non-duality and support is just a self-centered concern, like I want her to see things the way I sometimes see things. But as you say, non-duality is not the correct viewpoint. It is just one of many viewpoints. But I sometimes wonder if a relationship where one person has a sense that existence is unformed and the other has a sense that it is formed is doomed to failure. What do you think?" And this same person sent in an addendum to this question. He further wrote, "In my girlfriend's case, since she didn't ever receive proper love and support from her parents, I think the very mention of impermanence and non-self is inherently frightening. It got me wondering whether things like impermanence and the cloud metaphor can only be heard if you feel safe enough to hear them, In my own case, I have a very loving family, so perhaps I am happy to look a little deeper at whether things have any stability and permanence. But for other people, like my girlfriend, what she really, really wants is some form of permanence, because she never received anything permanent and stable as a child. As a result, she's not too keen on hearing that no permanence can be found anywhere. Your thoughts on this would be really appreciated. Thanks for doing these talks. So, first of all, I'd like to pick up on one of the lines here. He mentions that I've said it before, that non-duality is not the correct viewpoint. It's just one of the many viewpoints. So, in the apparent world of form, from a non-dual perspective, it's very important to note that every apparent form is unique. And I've said this so many times before. No two snowflakes are identical. No two leaves are identical. No two trees are identical. No two human beings have the same heart rate. No two human beings have the same breath rate. No two apparent human beings have the same skin composition. No two moments are identical, and so on. Each and every apparent form within existence is unique in some way. They may, at some point or in certain situations, be quite similar, but they are ultimately unique. And so in this situation where we are one apparent human being dealing with another apparent human being, it's very important to realize that you will never have exactly the same sensibility as someone else. It doesn't matter whether it's regarding non-dual perspective or whatever, you will not have the same exact sensibility on anything as someone else. You may be very similar, but in some way, there will be some subtle difference. And those subtle differences are not so subtle at certain points. So from this non-dual perspective, be very careful about wanting another person to see things exactly the way you see them. I've said it many, many times that a non-dual perspective is not for everyone. Not every apparent person is expressed in this way, with this particular sensibility. And if they're not expressed with this sensibility, there's no way you're going to get them to have this sensibility. If someone is drawn to a to a non-dual sensibility, or if they're expressed with a non-dual sensibility, that's not their doing. So for instance, my expressing the sensibility that I do, this is not my doing. I'm compelled to have this sensibility. This is the way that I'm expressed by this larger, unexplainable, unformed happening that we call life or existence or whatever. I don't have any choice in this. This is the only sensibility that arises. And ultimately, from this sensibility, there's no explanation for what's happening in this moment. No explanation whatsoever. The story that Daryl is sitting here expressing a non-dual sensibility, that's not the fact. From this so-called non-dual sensibility, there is only the impression that whatever this is, whatever is happening in this moment, it is a totally unexplainable happening. And it is happening automatically. It is simply occurring the way it occurs. And from that sensibility, each and every apparent human being is a valid, legitimate expression of this great mysterious dance that we call existence, or we call life. It isn't that one person is a better expression, or that someone has gone in the wrong direction, or that they have the wrong viewpoint. Each and every apparent human being has to be the expression that they are in this moment, and whatever that seems to be, that's on its way to something else. And within this world of apparent form, each and every expression is unique. So what seems to work for one person doesn't necessarily work for another person. And this is where we get, we find some difficulty with our approaches to life. Often we want to offer a blanket approach to life, thinking that we're going to come up with the one approach to life that's going to work for everyone. And oddly enough, when people say, this is what you should do, they're saying, basically, you should do what I'm doing. You should be the expression that I am, which is patently false. From this non-dual sensibility. We don't get to create our basic needs, our basic interests, our basic concerns. We don't get to create our essential abilities and our lack of abilities. And for each apparent person, it's a unique arrangement of these apparent things. So this person has asked or has commented that in considering this situation between himself and his girlfriend, he sometimes wonders if a relationship where one person has a sense that existence is unformed and the other has a sense that it is formed is doomed to failure. Is that kind of situation doomed to failure as far as a relationship goes? And from my apparent experience and perspective, no, it's not doomed to failure. I know many people, many couples, where one is very interested in this non-dual sensibility and the other is not interested in it at all. And those couples seem to be quite fine with that situation. Maybe one of the biggest aspects this question brings up is, be very careful about asking me for relationship advice. I'm not an expert in relationships. However, in my observation of relationships, both my own particular relationships and the relationships of many of my friends, relationship between two people is ultimately a total mystery. I've known couples that seem to be incredibly suited to each other. Their approach to life seemed to be so similar. They never argued around their separate perspectives. And yet, those relationships fell apart very quickly. And I know other relationships where, let's see, I know one couple in particular that they've been together for about 40 years, and they tell me that every morning they wake up wondering why they're together, because they have so much difficulty around so many different things. And yet the notion that they might separate is something that neither one of them can live with. Relationships are, again, ultimately an expression of this greater unexplainable happening of existence. It's not that two people are choosing to get to be together. It's not that you're going to be able to figure out what it is, ultimately, that you need to stay together. It's simply, ultimately, that if life keeps you together, that's what happens. If life separates you, that's what happens. Now, on your day-to-day, from the day-to-day viewpoint, life may compel you to consider the various aspects of your relationship and to question what it is you might need in order to maybe adjust it here and there. But even that is the compelled expression of this greater event. So when I say that ultimately it's the greater mysterious dance of life that is going to keep you together or not keep you together, I'm not saying that on a day-to-day situation or in the day-to-day situation, you won't give some consideration to what your relationship might need. I'm saying that whatever happens is ultimately a totally unexplainable event, simply moving the way it moves. Who knows, in your own particular situation, whether your relationship is going to go one direction or another? And the final portion of this question is that all of this has brought up in the questioner consideration as to what is required in order to actually hear a non-dual perspective. He's wondering if it could be that you have to feel safe enough in order to consider a non-dual perspective, in order to consider things like impermanence and no self. Is it necessary to have had a very safe and loving upbringing in order to feel safe enough to consider these things, which initially, when you do consider them, might bring up some feelings of insecurity? And again, from this non-dual perspective, we really can't apply any blanket statement to all of this, because it is the case that apparently for certain people, they may feel so insecure in listening to a non-dual perspective that they will literally get up and walk out of the room when it's being presented. And for others, they seem to feel safe enough to consider a very different perspective. However, there are also situations where someone can be desperately insecure, and upon hearing the non-dual perspective, upon hearing that or considering that all apparent things are moving on to something else, and that there is no absolute stability to any of this, there is only situations of apparent stability, upon hearing that fact, they somehow come to realize that, oh, it's quite fine to feel insecure about certain situations because those situations are insecure. those situations of apparent form are insecure, and that ultimately that's okay because that is the nature of all existence. Whether or not an apparent person relates to a non-dual sensibility, again, is ultimately the expression of this greater mysterious dance of existence. And the situation of someone relating to a non-dual sensibility, that apparent situation can present itself in any number of ways. So we really can't give any blanket statement about what's required or how this is going to happen. And again, this is borne out in our simple apparent observations of existence, because throughout history, no two people have ever come to this apparent awakening in exactly the same way. And that's why you can't just make some blanket statement or set forward some blanket approach to so-called spiritual awakening. All kinds of people say, oh, well, you need to meditate, or you don't need to meditate, or you just have to do this, or you just have to do that. And, you know, that may have apparently been the situation for one person, but for each and every person that has ever come to this awakening, it is ultimately a unique situation. It is simply a unique expression of this greater unexplainable dance of existence. If it wasn't, we could just set forward one particular set of behavior, or set of behaviors that would allow everyone to come to this apparent awakening. But that's not ever going to happen. Because we're not causing this so-called awakening. We're not causing the situation where it seems as though certain apparent human beings have this non-dual sensibility. All right. A second person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. On your site, you say spiritual awakening doesn't require a new experience. It's simply seeing clearly what's already happening. I wonder if you could say a bit more about that, seeing clearly." The reason I ask is that I suspect that my seeing clearly is very much on the intellectual level. It does indeed seem perfectly obvious to me that stuff just happens. There's no me in control. Forms are in a constant state of flux. Words are just noises we make, etc., etc. And I admit that I also tell myself these things to try to make myself feel better. Oftentimes after life events are causing me pain. However, I suspect that what you mean by seeing clearly is something that happens more or less all the time, simultaneously with life events, and something that is pre-verbal or non-verbal, hence your use of the verb seeing rather than understanding, for example. Typically, I feel a great deal of anguish for half the day, usually the morning, and then become philosophical about it in the evening. Okay, I acknowledge totally that that's how life is expressing me, but part of that expression is not seeing clearly, unfortunately. It reminds me of one of those philosophical paradoxes, where someone might say, everything I say is a lie, or some such statement, the effect of which is to make your mind go numb. Basically, I'm tying myself in knots. Can you help? Many thanks in advance. First of all, I have no idea whether anything I say can be of support. But in relation to these comments, the first thing that comes up is this phrase, seeing clearly, I use that as a way of expressing that this non-dual perspective is a very simple acknowledgement of what's going on in any moment. It's not just moments of stress. It's just a very simple acknowledgement of what has been basically happening all along. So even in the most boring situations, what seems to be the most ordinary moment of the day, that moment is a totally unexplainable event, simply happening automatically. And so is each and every other apparent moment. Now, initially, this non-dual perspective is very much what we would call an intellectual consideration. It's usually the case that some apparent person presents this non-dual perspective, and in that there is an intellectual consideration of what our actual experience of life has been, and in that consideration, the usual view of existence is revealed to be nonsensical. Our usual assessments of existence, the assessment that it has form, the assessment that we're ultimately doing our lives, it's a very simple thing to point out that there is no fundamental experience that backs that up. Now, usually, along with this acknowledgement, this apparent intellectual acknowledgement, there is just a very basic resting with the moment. Because the happening of this moment is our life. We don't have any other life. If we have apparent thoughts about the past or apparent thoughts about the future, those are happening now. And one of the basic considerations of a non-dual sensibility is that this focus on the world of description is not really acknowledging what's fundamentally happening in any particular moment, because the apparent thoughts are simply one small portion of a larger event. And so, along with the intellectual consideration of a non-dual perspective, if one is drawn to relate to this non-dual perspective, ultimately there has to be an acknowledgement of this larger event, so that ultimately we're not dealing with a description of existence. Ultimately, what is revealed is this very simple event of the moment. And so thoughts coming and going are simply a totally unexplainable happening. And so, you know, traditionally in this kind of exploration, in so-called meditation traditions, you would have or you would be invited to allow the attention to come to something like the breath rather than to stay tightly focused on the world of thought, because it may be realized that simply noticing the physical aspects of the moment, the breath coming and going, sounds coming and going, twinges, vibrations, pulsations, in that simple acknowledgement, it may also be acknowledged that the thoughts are also coming and going in the same way that that breath is coming and going, in the same way that the moods are shifting, in the same way that sound is arising and passing away, in the same way that those vibrations, pulsations, twinges, present themselves, this world of thought is presenting itself. And so there is this simple acknowledgement of the event of life. And in that, you know, thought can never really express any of this clearly or truly. But in that, this is more of a very simple seeing rather than understanding anything. It's a simple seeing of this moving, shifting, dancing event. And not an intellectual understanding. At a certain point within this non-dual perspective, it's realized that there's no need to understand anything ultimately. And what we call understanding is not understanding at all. It's all of that is a totally unexplainable event presenting itself. And it's simply rolling along in whatever way it's rolling along. So again, this seeing clearly is just a simple acknowledgement of this unexplainable happening of the moment. And with that, the apparent focus doesn't necessarily have to be on the world of thought. The attention, the apparent attention, what we call attention, may be grabbed by thought in moments, but it's not necessary that that focus maintain itself. If it's necessary for the focus to go on thought, it will go on thought. If it's not necessary, then maybe it will simply rest with an acknowledgement of this larger event, or it may rest with what we would call a physical happening within the moment rather than the world of thought. So a physical happening like the coming and going of the breath, or the coming and going of sound, or simply the what we would call the physical pressure of a body sitting or whatever, just that happening. And in that, there is an acknowledgement of the larger mysterious dance of the moment. Now, whether or not someone relates to that larger event more than they do to the world of thought, there's no way of making someone relate to that larger event from this non-dual perspective. Really, it's only possible to consider this larger event of existence. And if someone is drawn to that larger event and away from the sense of understanding, that's all part of the expression of this larger event. So again, in the presentation of a non-dual perspective, initially we have this intellectual consideration, and from that so-called intellectual consideration, it becomes obvious that the usual notion that life has form, the usual notion that we can explain life, the usual notion that we are somehow doing life, all of that becomes suspect. And in the course of that becoming suspect, there may be an acknowledgement of this simple happening of the moment and the realization that it doesn't matter whether the focus is on thought or on the larger event of the moment. It doesn't matter whether the focus is on an idea of doing something or attempting to understand something, or whether it's just a simple matter of resting with the happening of the moment. Everything just happens. And in that, there may be the realization that it's this larger event and its essential current that is manifesting everything. So I don't know if this is of any support to the person who wrote in, but that's all that's coming up in this moment. Another person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, in reading the Ashtavakra Gita or the Bhagavad Gita or Ramana Maharshi's books or the Buddhist scriptures, I get the impression that those sages were in such an exalted state of consciousness, beyond desire and suffering altogether. Your perspective leaves room for an ordinary guy like me, who is still having desires and aversions. Those sages seem to transcend it all. May you please comment. Also, what is Turiya? And Turiya is spelled T-U-R-I-A. This same person has gone on to send in another message, a continuation of this question, and he's written, in the Ashtavakra Gita, the sage is described as free from duality, winning or losing are the same in his eyes. He lives beyond the boundaries of pleasures, free from desires, gone beyond happiness or sadness, always in equanimity. Honor or dishonor have no significance in his eyes. Happy and clear-minded, his mind is not influenced by distress or pleasure. He sees himself as the unchanging self, and that self is with a capital S, free from confusion. Meeting a king or a woman or someone dear to his heart, he is without passion. He is not disturbed by being ridiculed. He's happy in sitting, eating, talking. His suffering has come to an end. He has no fear. He's free from desire of the senses, free from attachment. The Arahant in Theravada Buddhism is also depicted as free from desires, aversion, arrogance, and other negativities. In the Yoga Vasishta, the sage is awake in deep sleep, free from selfishness. No one is afraid of him, and he is not afraid of anyone. So, Daryl, how do you see these spiritual giants? Please explain their attainments from the perspective of your teaching. Sounds pretty impressive. First of all, this word Turiya, T-U-R-I-A, I've seen it spelt in a different way. It's basically the same word. The only experience I have with this word, it was used by Ramana Maharshi to express a fourth state of consciousness. Usually people would see life in terms of waking, dreaming, and sleeping states, and Ramana Maharshi would speak sometimes of a fourth state that he would call Turiya, and that was the state of acknowledging, or the realization that everything was the expression of this larger self. It wasn't just the little personal self, it was this larger self. But then he would also speak of another state, which he called Turiyatita, and that was the absolute state, in which case it was basically the realization that there's no way of describing any of what's happening in this moment, that the fundamental reality is beyond all description. And to have that realization. And so with that realization, there weren't really any particular states of consciousness. There was simply this larger, unexplainable happening that ultimately has no description whatsoever. It's just the happening of this moment. That's what is, and it has no ultimate explanation. So the rest of this comment and question, it brings up a few different aspects. First of all, be very careful about what other people say regarding non-duality. Ultimately, a non-dual perspective, the realization has to come from a simple acknowledgement of your life experience. Now, from this non-dual perspective, it's ultimately saying that existence has no particular form. Everything is changing. It's saying that the dance, or this flow that existence actually is not something that anyone is doing. We're not doing our own being. The process that we are, we're not ultimately doing that process. We don't create our basic needs, our basic interests, our basic concerns. We don't create our basic abilities, our lack of abilities, our loves. As Schopenhauer pointed out, you can do what you want to do, but you don't get to create your wants. So ultimately, we're not in charge of our lives. If we have an urge to address some situation in our apparent life, if we have an apparent urge to address an apparent situation in our life, that urge is not our creation. Some people are interested in physical fitness, and some people are interested in a career. Some people are interested in family. Some people are interested in science. We don't get to decide what we're going to be interested in. We simply unfold as a certain expression of nature. And ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, even though we can consider many of the aspects of life through our so-called intellect, ultimately, all of that is a totally mysterious, unexplainable happening. Everything is a totally mysterious, unexplainable happening, simply happening spontaneously or automatically or organically, however you want to put it, like the flowing of a river, like the movement of a cloud. Everything is simply occurring as an expression of this great mysterious flow. And the support for that non-dual perspective has to come from your actual experience, not from someone else's words, not from someone else's description of what their expression is. So one of the aspects of this apparent non-dual awakening that I often find is overlooked is the fact that if we acknowledge how this greater mysterious dance of existence is expressing itself, no two apparent forms are identical. So be very careful about reading some description of how a person is going to be if they have this so-called awakening. No two apparent awakened beings are identical. So we have within the historical record of so-called awakened beings, we have individuals like the Buddha, we have individuals like Christ, we have individuals like Alan Watts and Chogyam Trungpa. Now, the record of how the Buddha behaved, I mean, who knows how the Buddha actually behaved? But from the record, he seemed to be a pretty impressive fellow. And yet, from the record, Alan Watts and Chogyam Trungpa had certain aspects to their personalities that didn't seem to be so impressive. And yet, I don't have the impression that they weren't awakened. My impression is that they simply were a different expression of existence, even with this acknowledgement that there is fundamentally an unexplainable happening expressing itself. Within that, they were a unique expression, not like the Buddha. However, it's also the case that if we read the historical record very carefully, even though it says that these sages were totally beyond all desire and totally beyond any consideration of pain or sorrow or any such things, if we read the record very carefully, we find that the Buddha had back pain, and that historically the record says that his back pain was so severe at times that he was unable to complete a teaching, and he would ask someone else to complete the teaching, and he would lie down behind that person while they gave the teaching because the pain in his back was so extreme. It's also the case that when he left a certain area for the last time, a place called Vulture Peak, he had spent a good portion of his life, even though he wandered, he had spent a good portion of his life on Vulture Peak. And when he was leaving it, and he knew, like he was in his 80s, he knew that it would probably be the last time that he would see that spot. It's recorded that just before he left, he turned around and he took a very long look at this place where he had spent so much of his life. And it's in something called the Sutra of the Elephant's Gaze, I believe, if I remember correctly. So what was going on there? Why is he taking this long, fuzzy look at this, you know, why is he having this consideration of his time spent on Vulture Peak if he was totally beyond any consideration of emotion? Or we have this other situation where his two most, I don't know how you would put it, his two closest disciples, they both died before he died. And when the second one died, he gathered all of his monks together, the ones that were with him at that time, and he said, "This assembly is empty for me now." He said, "Isn't it amazing that, you know, I'm not weeping and wailing, but for me, this assembly is empty." Now, what's he trying to express in that? You know, this is just after the deaths of Moggallana and Sariputta, his two closest disciples. And he gathers everyone else together and he says, "This assembly is now empty for me." Is that the expression of someone who's beyond all emotion? Or if you look at a description of the arahants within Buddhism, the awakened disciples within Buddhism, you have stories saying that certain arahants had to jump over puddles. It was in their nature that they had to jump over puddles. And if you read it more closely, you discover that these arahants were 10-year-old boys. And as an arahant, they did only what they had to do. But one of the things they had to do was jump over puddles. Now, why would they be jumping over puddles? Because that's what a 10-year-old boy does. And there's some joy in that. Now, if they were truly beyond, like they are beyond desire because they don't see existence in terms of desire. With this awakening, existence isn't a matter of someone following desires. Existence is the dance of this greater unformed event. And so within Buddhism, the Buddha points out that one who has come to what actually is no longer describes life in terms of physical forms, feelings, perceptions, mental activities, or states of consciousness. There is only an unformed. There is only this unformed, unexplainable happening that we would call existence. But you don't even call it existence at a certain point. There is just this totally unexplainable happening. And from that perspective, yes, one could be said to be beyond desire, but on a day-to-day basis, that totally unexplainable happening seems to be a bunch of forms, a bunch of apparent human beings driven by their particular desires. Or if we look at someone like Ramana Maharshi, he basically died of cancer, and towards the end there was a great deal of physical pain, and he would be asked, "Do you want some painkiller?" And he would say, "No, this is just the pain of life. It's not my particular pain. This is the pain of life. And so, you know, I don't want any painkiller." Now, if he was totally beyond pain, he wouldn't be able to acknowledge that pain. There wouldn't be the consideration that it's not his personal pain, it is simply the pain of life. Obviously the pain is there because he's acknowledging it's the pain of life. But from his perspective, that's it. Life is painful. And in his particular situation, he didn't have any particular urge towards painkillers. Now, another so-called enlightened being might be wolfing down painkillers as quickly as he or she possibly could, because no two apparent awakened beings are identical. Now, if you really were beyond what we usually call desire, in the way that desire would cease to exist, then you wouldn't eat, you wouldn't avoid any kind of dangerous situation, you wouldn't move in any particular direction. And when I say this, I'm speaking from our usual sense of life being a bunch of forms operating within a world on the day-to-day basis. So it's obvious that, you know, what we call desire does not disappear upon awakening. However, from the perspective of this so-called awakened being, it's not something called desire. It's not a person moving to desire. Or it's not a person ultimately considering pain and pleasure. It's not a person ultimately needing to consider honor or dishonor or distress. When they say free from desires, it's not saying that what we usually call desire has ceased to exist altogether. It's just that it's no longer seen to be desire. It is instead ultimately the movement of this greater unexplainable happening of existence. Now, you know, when these comments arise in relation to this questioner, the only basis for this comes from a simple acknowledgement of this moment. And we can all acknowledge the same simple fact, that in a consideration of what's actually happening in life, it's quite obvious that existence has no particular form, because we run around saying everything is changing. It's quite obvious that we don't create ourselves. Like no one has any sensibility that is saying that I existed somewhere else before existence itself presented itself, and I decided to have existence, the sense of existing present itself. Nobody has that memory or that sensibility. It's just that what we call existence one day presents itself, and that this happening that we call existence presents itself in this ever-shifting flow. Sometimes it seems to be us awake, sometimes it seems to be us asleep, sometimes it seems to be us dreaming, but whatever it seems to be is always moving on to something else. That's a simple acknowledgement. It's also, if we consider how it is that we came up with descriptions of life, it's a very simple thing to acknowledge that when this event that we call existing first presented itself, you know, whether it be in the womb or just out of the womb, what we call being in the womb or being out of the womb, that it had no description. And the labels that we have within our storyline, we were taught to bark those labels, but those labels are only ultimately pointing to an ultimate mystery. because no one has any sense of understanding existence when they just come out of the womb. If you want a true explanation of what existence is, ask a baby that's 1 hour old. Ask the baby, what is this all about? And you'll get the true answer. For the baby, there isn't even a question. There's just what's happening in the moment. There's no understanding of it. There's no description of it. For the baby, there isn't any question about it. There isn't any question as to whether it's desire or aversion or a woman or a king or a queen or honor or dishonor. It's just fundamentally a happening that has no explanation. If you ask someone who's 20 years old, apparently 20 years old, then you'll get a focus on descriptions of form and descriptions of doing, descriptions of accomplishment and failure, none of which are true. Because all of these labels simply point to an essential, mysterious happening that no one can ever find any fundamental explanation for, and the explanations we have are totally absurd. All the explanations are descriptions of form, when we can all easily say that there is no essential form to existence. So these explanations are just ultimately meaningless sounds pointing to forms that ultimately don't exist. And yet we somehow believe they're an ultimate reality. So in this simple acknowledgement of what's actually going on in this moment, we find ourselves outside of explanations of desire and aversion. And even if we do seem to be functioning from fears and pain and concerns, worldly concerns, ultimately that's not what's happening. And so you find yourself, we find an ultimate freedom from those explanations. And there is an essential functioning, a dynamic playfulness, a vital liveliness of this moment. And that is ultimately beyond these kinds of explanations. And so you apparently become a person who is free from those explanations because desire and fear are not driving existence. There's no way of explaining what this movement of existence is. There's no way of saying what's exactly happening here. And so ultimately there is a freedom from desire and pleasure and fear, even though on a day-to-day basis it may seem to be expressing itself in those apparent ways. So the freedom is not found in a situation where desire just disappears altogether, or fear just disappears altogether, or interests in certain things just disappear altogether. The freedom is found in the fact that those explanations aren't really what's happening here. That there's no way of saying what's happening here, and ultimately the freedom is that we're not doing any of this. It is ultimately playing out in whatever way it's going to play out. We haven't been doing any of it thus far, and we won't be doing it in the future. We're not causing any of this to happen. We are an expression of whatever this greater mysterious dance is. And so ultimately there is a kind of resting with that fact, that even in our day-to-day situations, it may seem that we have certain desires and fears, and there may even be the passing consideration that, is there some way I can manipulate this? But ultimately, there's an acknowledgement of the fact that, no, that's not the situation. It's simply a great mysterious dance automatically playing out in whatever way it plays out, and within that, there is some fundamental sense of rest, what we might call a fundamental sense of rest, but even that's a ridiculous description. There's just this happening. All right, next person has written in saying, "Hello, Mr. Bailey. I am totally unawakened and have been struggling with non-duality teaching in respect to still feeling there is something out there that people like S. Killaby and Jeff Foster and in some respects you point to, some non-conceptual reality that is there, and I'm supposed to get some juice from this, that it's supposed to be sustaining me in some way. Frankly, I am either not ready for this just yet, or I'm misunderstanding the message, or this is not my path due to needing something like a connection with the divine, which I find quite lacking in this tradition, or there's a general fear of commitment, or it could be a combination of all of these things. Perhaps I may be where you were when you veered off the path, or at least you weren't ready to initially embrace Robert Adams and his path. You followed your own instinct. I have a deep respect for this. You followed your own way. Everyone must do this anyway. I have a deep respect also for your teachings and feel it has resonated for me more than others, more than other teachings. In any case, it is hard to walk away from your teaching because I have a friend who I deeply respect and he feels it would really help me as it has helped him. And it is kind of ridiculous to state that I am walking away when I really haven't studied your teachings too much outside of your website. I am giving myself a year or two to just back away from any more teachings. I can tend to get spiritually greedy and or end up not doing anything, which isn't helpful either. I just feel the world still holds some juice for me, getting somewhere, and Lord knows I need to get somewhere right now with my life circumstances. Thank you for your attention to the above." So there isn't any question in this person's writing, but I felt it was important to read this out. Ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, you are going to be expressed in whatever way you're expressed. And ultimately, from this non-dual perspective, it's not important whether you even have a non-dual perspective. There will be some approach to life that you relate to, and it may be, as you know, this person is expressing, it may be just backing away from everyone's approach to life in order to simply move in some other direction. And from this non-dual perspective, that's perfectly legitimate. Again, we're not doing any of it. And a non-dual perspective is not the one and only expression of existence. And from a non-dual perspective, it's not meant to be the one and only expression of existence. It's simply one of the many mysterious expressions of existence. Each and every human being from this perspective is a legitimate expression of existence. If we take this teaching and start telling everybody that this is what everyone is supposed to approach life with, if we start saying that this is the way everyone is supposed to look at existence, that's against the non-dual perspective fundamentally. There are lots of people in the world who don't focus on a non-dual perspective, who have no sense of a non-dual perspective, and they're happy people. Life is expressing them in a different way. They have certain other apparent focuses that are more meaningful to them than a non-dual perspective. And we don't have to be concerned about what focus is the right focus for us, because ultimately we will be expressed in a certain way. Many people come to an apparent non-dual perspective, or they approach a non-dual perspective, and they find out that it doesn't really speak to them in any way. Or maybe it speaks to them in some way, but not ultimately, and they find themselves drawn to some other perspective, to some other approach. And that's the legitimate dance of existence. One of the... Well, I remember in the book Siddhartha, Siddhartha comes to the realization that yes, he sees this larger, unexplainable dance of existence, but the fact remains that even with this so-called wisdom, he's unable to do the things that many other people do. He's unable to relate to family situations. He's unable to do certain things that a so-called worldly individual can do. That ultimately, this non-dual perspective, it's all it is a simple acknowledgement that this is one big, unformed event, unexplainable event, presenting itself, that no one understands what it is, that no one gets to say what they're going to be as an individual. And yes, there are some apparent wonderful aspects that come from that so-called realization, but there are also many expressions of existence that are also just as wonderful, and they don't come with a non-dual perspective. So, again, from this non-dual perspective, one of the apparent outcomes of a non-dual perspective is a respect and an acknowledgement for all of the expressions of existence. An appreciation of all of the various facets of this great mysterious dance of existence. So, ultimately, it doesn't matter if somebody else thinks you should have a non-dual perspective, or that you should relate to an approach to life that doesn't have any sense of the divine. It doesn't matter, because life is going to express you in your own unique way. And that is ultimately going to play out in whatever way it plays out. Along the way, along the apparent way, it may not be so easy. It may be very confusing. It may seem very confusing. There may be situations in which we feel very desperate. And all of that is the natural expression of existence as well. So whatever direction you have to go, whatever apparent direction you have to move, good on you, mate. Whatever expression you are a legitimate, valid expression of existence. Follow whatever makes most sense to you. Follow whatever you are compelled to do. I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever. Follow whatever you're compelled to do. You're not following. You will be expressed in whatever way you're expressed. It will play out in whatever way it plays out. And it will not play out in exactly the same way as someone else. In most cases, you will be radically different from everyone else. And in some cases, you may be very similar, apparently, to some other apparent human being, but you will never be exactly the same expression as some other human being. Another person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. I just wanted to connect once more and say how much I enjoy listening to your monthly question and answers. For me, it is the simplicity of the message that resonates here. Like you say, all there is this vibrant, pulsing event that is without form. Take away the labels, and what is left is what always is. Yet there is the feeling of a me getting in the way, of a direct seeing of that. All part of the inexplicable event. I remember visiting New York many years ago. I live in the United Kingdom, and took a trip to see the Statue of Liberty. As the ferry took us past the monument, I recall straining to actually see it. I mean, I could see it, but I wanted to really see it. That is, without the apparent seer in the way, with the mental chatter going on saying, "Wow, that's the Statue of Liberty." It's the same when I look up into the night sky and see the stars, the moon, the blackness. The little chattery voice saying, "Hey, look at the wonder of the inky blackness that goes on for infinity," or some other poetic type of commentary. I feel an agitation arising at what is perceived as an intrusion into the direct seeing and appreciation of the night sky. But what or who feels the intrusion? So when it is heard that this is simply the great mystery unfolding itself as it does, and there is no rhyme or reason or explanation for this, then it's okay to relax. There is no escape from this. There is no getting outside and looking back on it, because this is all there is apparently happening now. But does anything ever really happen? I'm not sure that any of this makes sense, and I know for sure that you have spoken often about these very things. So I do not ask or expect you to go over the same ground again for me, but I just wanted to express some of the dialogue that spins almost continuously here to someone who may say, "Yes, I know what you are talking about," rather than, "Are you crazy?" Thanks again for the website and your continued sharing. How do you manage to stay so bright at 3 or 4 a.m. beats me. Kind regards. So as this person has written, there is no actual question here. He's just expressing some of the stuff that goes on in his own process. And yes, I know what you're talking about. Even with this acknowledgement of the larger event, there still may be moments where there's the feeling that we don't really want that larger event to be expressing itself the way it does. There may be moments where we look up at the night sky and the stars and the moon and the blackness, and there isn't any comment on it. But it's not a situation where thought is going to disappear altogether. It's part of this larger expression of existence that the commentary, the so-called mental commentary, is also there. And ultimately what that is, no one knows. That's also a totally unexplainable happening, just happening. This person already knows this. He's not expecting me to offer any clarity within this situation. He's just stating very openly the happening. He's, you know, offering these descriptions of the happening. And he knows that ultimately even these explanations aren't the explanation for what's going on here. But yes, you can have this realization. There can be an acknowledgement of the larger unexplainable happening of the moment. And in that event, there are also those apparent moments where we'd like it to be expressing itself in a different way. There is the fundamental acknowledgement that it isn't, that fundamentally it's expressing itself the way it is, but it would be nice if it expressed itself in a slightly different way. Whether it will or not, who knows? And how do I stay so bright at 3 or 4 in the morning? I don't really feel that bright right at the moment, but it may have something to do with being raised on a farm. Early mornings were the norm Even when we left the farm, my entire family continued to get up very early in the morning, and we still do. And all of that is a totally unexplainable, mysterious happening. There are mornings when I wish that it was expressing itself in a different way. Anyway, another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. In your book, Essence Revisited, you point out that ideas of evolution, direction, and progress are fantasies. Does this mean that Charles Darwin was wrong? I have an idea of how to answer this, but I would like to hear your answer and elaboration of this question. Thank you for all of the great writings and talks." Okay, yes, in Essence Revisited, I make the statement that ideas of evolution, direction, and progress are fantasies, because I'm making the statement that all explanation of existence is a fantasy. Explanations are usually dealing with form, they're descriptions of form. And in that description of form, there's descriptions of time, there are descriptions of certain directions, descriptions of certain paths that certain forms have taken through a lifetime. And all of that is a description of form, when ultimately no form really exists. Whatever form arises simply changes from moment to moment and then will disappear altogether. What actually is something that has no particular form. So that's the response to this question. I mean, these apparent thoughts, these apparent considerations, these apparent ideas, they arise as an expression of this larger mysterious event of existence, but they aren't ultimately any explanation of this larger dance of existence. However, whatever this is expresses itself on a day-to-day level with these apparent thoughts coming and going, and our apparent being is expressed with these apparent thoughts. Again, ultimately, all of these labels are simply meaningless sounds pointing to various aspects of this essential, mysterious movement of life. And that movement, that fundamental flowing, that is totally without any explanation. It when it first apparently expresses itself, there is no explanation that comes along with it, and any of the explanations that we get are simply, the labels that we have, they simply are labels placed on this fundamental mystery, this fundamentally mysterious dynamic. If we look at ideas of progress, I mean, the progression of any particular apparent form is to ultimately blip out of existence. It doesn't matter whether it's a person or an idea or a mood or a galaxy. These apparent forms arise, they change, and ultimately they fade away. So that's our ultimate progression, apparent progression, which wouldn't be considered a progression in any way. From this non-dual perspective, there is simply an unformed happening, simply happening, and it is always what seems to be the present moment simply expressing itself. Without the storylines, it's not a matter of a particular person moving through life over time, moving in a particular direction, progressing in a particular way. It is ultimately without that explanation. Even those storylines are totally mysterious happening, simply happening, and that happening is always apparently just the happening of the present moment, because nothing else is apparently expressing itself. Okay, another person has written in saying, "Dear Mr. Bailey, I have read your two books, enjoyed them, and greatly benefited from them. Perhaps you would answer a question for me. My understanding is that we are awareness," and he's written awareness with a capital A, "and that it is unchanging stillness. I also understand from your writings that existence is a continuous, indefinable, and mysterious flux. From my understanding of non-duality, we cannot stand apart from that flux. These statements seem to be contradictory. We seem to have both stillness and flux. Can you help me to understand?" What arises from this question immediately is just simply that a non-dual sensibility is not going to leave you with any explanation of existence. These intellectual considerations are meant to simply point out the contradiction in our world of thought, and ultimately it doesn't leave us with any description of existence. So the expression of a non-dual perspective is simply pointing out that the world of thought is always in contradiction. And so, yes, if we stay within the world of thought, we end up with contradiction. We end up with ideas of stillness and ideas of flux. Now, these concepts are presented from a non-dual perspective in order to perhaps point out the ultimate uselessness of thought in describing existence. So if we really consider what we consider to be our basic experience of life, it can be pointed out that there is no fundamental form, so that existence is ultimately a flux. But the word flux is not what the event actually is. So the word flux is still not acknowledging the fundamental fact of this moment. The fundamental fact of this moment is an event that can't be described in any way whatsoever. And this apparent word flux just arises as part of this event. And so this word flux, that too is ultimately a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. It's the same with the word stillness. The word stillness in some of these non-dual expressions, they may be an invitation to you or an encouragement to explore. I mean, who wouldn't want to come to some magical state of stillness? And in this so-called awakening, there can be some sense of rest or stillness. But the word stillness is not what that is. So ultimately, from a non-dual perspective, we're not something explainable. We're not something that is actually called awareness. And it is not a thing that is unchanging stillness. That actually would be in contradiction to a true non-dual perspective. If we look at what non-duality has been defined as over the centuries. So if we look at something like the Ashtavakra Gita, I mean, ultimately, they're negating any description of existence. And that includes descriptions of awareness or stillness. It says that someone who's awakened doesn't see existence in terms of a concentrated mind or a distracted mind. That even in situations of confusion, they don't see it as confusion. Ultimately, it is a totally unexplainable happening. So, no matter how a non-dual perspective is presented, it's not ultimately going to leave you with some explanation of existence, and it's not ultimately going to leave you with some unchanging mood or some unchanging state. However, if there is this acknowledgement that life is this moving, shifting event that no one is ultimately doing, that if you simply sit and rest, everything that you are is going to be presented. Your urges to move in a certain direction, your apparent actions, your apparent direction through life will simply manifest. If it's acknowledged that we are not something separate from this moving, shifting, unexplainable dance of existence, then there is a sense of resting, a sense of stillness within that. There's really ultimately nothing to be concerned about, because the whole thing is going to play out in whatever way it plays out. Now, on a day-to-day basis, it may not seem to be all that pleasant. It may have incredible incredible difficulties and pain and lots of emotional movement. But ultimately, there is this acknowledgement that it's all simply playing out on its own, that we're not causing it to move in any particular direction. If we have an urge to move in a direction, if we have an interest to move in a certain direction, that is an expression of nature. We don't create that urge and we don't create that interest. It's simply ultimately an expression of existence. So even when it seems to be us functioning from our desires, our interests, our abilities, this non-dual sensibility is a simple acknowledgement that everything we are is also an expression of this larger mysterious dance of existence. Our interests and capacities are not our creation. It's not our personal doing. So there can be this consideration that life is this larger movement, that we are an expression of this dance, this vital dynamic, this unexplainable functioning, and that there's ultimately no explanation for it. And still, or yet, there is a sense of resting in that acknowledgement, because ultimately we're not doing it. It will simply play out in whatever way it plays out, with moments of clarity, moments of confusion, moments of apparent sadness, moments of apparent happiness, moments of apparent courage and confidence, moments of apparent fear and anxiety. Ultimately, none of this can be explained in any way whatsoever. If you want to focus on concepts, you will ultimately run into contradiction and conflict. If you're going to focus on explanations of existence, you will end up with ideas of stillness and flux, and they will be in conflict, because a non-dual sensibility is not ultimately leaving you with a focus on the world of thought. It's saying, whatever this is, it cannot be explained in any way whatsoever. It just is what it is, and it simply happens the way it happens. So I don't know if those comments are any support in any way. It's all that's arising in this moment. And last of all, someone has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. What is the unchanging, the ultimate?" Yeah, all right. We're going to go out with a bang. Within the world of relative expression, what is the absolute? It's just this. You know, we could point to it as the happening of this moment. But you can't even call it the happening of this moment. That just points to what seems to be the event of this moment. We all have the sense that something is going on in this moment. Something is happening. And what that is, there's no way of saying. It doesn't have a form to be described. Whatever forms seem to exist are always moving on to some other expression. There is this, what seems to be a vital dance, an unexplainable functioning, the unformed ocean of existence, the river of life, the great spirit, whatever you want to call it. All of this terminology just points to this. And there's no way of saying what this is. Now, some people would say it's that fundamental feeling of existence, but be careful with that, because whatever this is, it doesn't always express itself as a feeling of existence. We have what we call sleep, deep sleep, in which there isn't any feeling of existing. So whatever this is, it has no particular form. There's no way to describe it as anything in particular. Or apparent descriptions will arise, descriptions of form. Those can't be true, because our fundamental sense of this is that all of those forms are changing, they're moving on to something else. And even if we say, okay, it's formless, it's the formless. The formless, this word formless, this apparent word formless, is just, who knows what that is? That's a mysterious happening, simply happening. And it is obviously one small portion of this larger event that we call the moment. So even if you drop the label formlessness, this so-called happening still continues to make itself obvious. So that's the absolute. That's the unchanging. It's just this, whatever this is. And we don't even need to say it's thisness or thusness or isness. All the labels can drop in this moment. And whatever this is goes on making itself obvious. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this month's questions. As always, whatever I've expressed is simply for your consideration. If you relate to what is expressed here, and you relate to what is generally known as a non-dual perspective, it's also the case that this is just one of life's mysterious expressions. Ultimately, what this is, no one can say. Ultimately, what's happening here, if anything is happening here, no one can say. Or there is no way of explaining the event of this moment in any way whatsoever. Even to call it the event of this moment is a totally ridiculous thing to say on some level. So everything that's offered here is simply for your consideration. If you relate to it, that's great. If not, that's great. There are a lot of other apparent expressions other than a non-dual expression and other than a non-dual sensibility. And they're just as legitimate, just as valid as this expression. So until next time, I hope that life offers wonderful things. I know ultimately it's going to offer a mixed bag of things. It is what it is. Bye.